Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, your source for Friday night conservative talk. And I am here with my co-host, Mr. G. Mangani. G, how are you doing, brother?
Good. How are you doing, William?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I just got a note from our other co-host, Miss Annette. Big John, if you can check out what her problem is. She's struggling to get on, some technical difficulties. But that said, we've got a big show tonight for you guys. We are going to talk some Ukraine peace talks, and then we're going to get into some California news. We also have a guest coming up, Tyler Collins, who is my new co-host for Fired Up California. Gee, you remember this show was supposed to talk about topics in terms of a California topic, but there's so much national stuff that we kind of lost that. And then when I saw the Liberty Lens, a plug there for our producer Big John's Liberty show that he does with former Libertarian vice presidential candidate Mike Turma, I said, damn it, John, we're going to do Fired Up California.
Well, you know, what some people say is what happens in California stays in California, right? So some people in Texas aren't interested in what happens over here. So I think that's a great thing to have a show separate.
You know, you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's the largest state population-wise. In the golden days, as California went, the nation would go. But in this new era, thankfully, that has stalled. And just to let the audience know, that's still important because a lot of this has stalled out of committees. A Democrat will bring up like AB5, which was taking away the there were no more gig workers. I forget how it's structured. But in essence, they tried to make that national, but it never got out of committee. So this is an important show, and I'm hoping Tyler comes on here shortly. But that said, let's get down to it, G. It's a big show. We're going to start off with Ukraine. And so let's cut through the noise. Trump's latest takedown of Zelensky. Zelensky's widening, and J.D. Vance is standing tall for Trump's America First approach. All in the middle of this geopolitical mess that's been brewing for years. G, your initial thoughts on all of this?
Look, this war has been going on for a long time, and I thought Zelensky and Ukraine would topple by summer of 2022. They've held on strong, and you know, I've been pro-Ukraine because I don't think any country should be invading any other country. But the truth is not so clear-cut. This is not the good guys versus the bad guys. This is a difference of opinion type of thing. And, I think this war might come to a close, but not the way Zelensky wants it to.
Well, look, this whole thing traces back to the Obama era meddling in 2014, where Victoria Nuland, is it Nuland or Nyland? Anyway, she's a bad person. She pushed for a U.S.-backed shakeup in Ukraine, and she was caught on tape picking who should run the show. Now, that's what you call a classic overreach that many nations have suffered through with our CIA or military intelligence at the time. And it's been a mess ever since. What they did, the United States of America did, was help in a coup and overthrow the democratically elected government in 2014, because that government was more aligned with Russia than it was with the U.S. And from there, gee, it just got worse and worse and worse. And Russia's been sounding the alarm for years, meaning do not get close to our borders. And let's not forget, gee, that the Allies, history lesson, folks, they swore up and down after World War II, NATO wouldn't creep up to the Russians' doorstep. Oops. Because that promise got lost in the mail, G. What do you think of that? The coup, I call it a coup. You may not agree. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But your thought. Oh, and where we have the wonderful Miss Beautiful.
There she is.
Ukraine, something's all night.
Yeah, she's letting us know his thoughts on the Ukraine coup. What's your thought on that? Do you think that was a coup or not, G?
I mean, the U.S. has been known to just meddle in other countries, right, and putting in people who are friendly to their way of thinking. And watching Turning Point on Netflix, the Cold War, that's happened a lot under Democrats and Republicans. So in this case, I do think that it was – I mean, maybe it was just a withdrawal of support so that the pro-Russian Ukrainian government would not last. The more you meddle, the more pissed off you get the population. So I'm sure a lot of Ukrainians are pissed off, and Yeah, so we get what we deserve many times, I think, unfortunately. And I think as much of an interventionist I might have been in the early 2000s after 9/11, I'm more of an isolationist now. It's like, let's just leave them alone. And you know what? What do we care about Eastern Ukraine? Like, I know we don't want World War III to erupt, but what if most of those people are Russian?
What I'm hearing from you, G, is that it's not that you're an isolationist. It's more of a strategic. You know, what do they matter to us strategically in the grand, right, in the bigger picture? And if it's nothing, then stay out of their affairs. We tend to want to put our diplomacy. I used to believe in that, hey, let's spread democracy throughout the world. Because I'm like, it happened in Panama. It happened in other countries. So let's do that. And I'm like, well, some, like the Middle East, you can't have democracy when it's a theology type scenario. What are your thoughts here real quick on the U.S. always wanting to spread democracy? And this time we're pulling up.
Well, I do think I spent the afternoon listening to Jeffrey Sachs talk about this, and I agree with what you said, William. I heard a bit of what you said in the just a moment ago talking to G. I mean, I think we were a little bit out of our lane here. Jeffrey Sachs gave a really great and compelling history, basically talking about how for a very long time Putin has said, I just don't want you to go east, and we've been pushing. And I think we're being provocative. I think we're pressing his buttons a little bit. We pushed east, and he didn't want them to be in NATO. He made that clear. And there's been little steps all along the way historically. Like you said, even before 2014 when that happened, like in I think it started like in 1998, there was something that Bill Clinton did. Then there was a little bit pushing with a little bit with George Bush. And here we are. So I sort of – I don't want to say I'm on anyone's side, but I understand the Russian perspective now and why it's getting to this hot point. But it's for, I'm sorry, but people love war. They do. It makes people money. And that's really a sad truth. So
I don't think anybody loves war. I think greed overrides their love for war, you know?
Okay.
And Big John, our producer, makes a good point. There's a difference between a non-interventionist and an isolationist. So I think, G, what you're trying to do is look at me correctly.
Non-interventionist.
Yeah. So one of the reasons.
Just to ask you, though, you don't think that some people love war? I do think that some people
oh,
don't.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Some people, but
people in power, that the powerful people don't have a problem sacrificing people's lives. They don't.
The elites. We are chess pawns. There's a difference between a general in war putting pieces on the chess table versus a politician putting pieces on the table to expand the empire, you know, without a second thought as to the people involved. So, yes, I agree with that. And the reason I say, every time I say that, ironically, I think of Ulysses S. Grant. After Lincoln fired every general, what's your great plan here, Mr. I'm desperate alcoholic general? You know, he didn't say that, but that's what he was dealing with. And Grant was like, well, we outnumbered them X amount to X amount, so we're just going to overwhelm him. You know, and that's how the Civil War turned. I'm simplifying it. We just overwhelmed them with sheer numbers. Both sides lost, you know, tens of thousands on the battlefield, but that's kind of what we did at the end of the day. So, I always think of that because war, and I always tell my partner, Big John, because he's anti-war, and so am I, but my take is this: when you go to war, that's a last resort. You don't go to war to seek, come to the table, let's make an equal peace, because all that's doing is delaying the next war, because your enemy is just going to rebuild. So I'm like, you go to war to destroy, to kill your enemy, to subjugate him, and then to force peace on your terms. And I look at it like that from the perspective, I'm not looking for war. But if that's what you want to do, then you're going to regret it.
But then wouldn't you say then about World War I, we subjugated the Germans, and then look what happened in World War II?
Well, no. I'm talking about war. You're talking about the aftermath of war, you know? So we learned from World War I. We did not help them in the aftermath. We helped Germany in the aftermath of World War II. And ironically, just a couple years ago, Germany just finished paying their debt to society.
Right.
Yeah. Meaning, I forget what the term is.
We didn't help Germany, but we actually punished them. We crushed them with debt that they couldn't pay, right, after World War I.
Right.
Didn't that make them angry? And didn't that set us up for World War II? That's what I'm asking.
Yes, Hitler did use that, but what I'm trying to say is we learned from that. After World War II, we helped Germany rebuild. You know, and yeah, I think that's smart. You help them rebuild in the image you want them. That's what winning is. So it doesn't happen again.
Let me bring it back to the Ukraine-Russian thing. So, again, in this documentary I was watching, it amazed me when Boris Yeltsin took the Russian Federation and he basically destroyed the Soviet Union. It was Boris Yeltsin. And at the time, they asked to join NATO.
Yeah.
And they were refused from joining NATO. When right there, you could realign the whole world to say, okay, it's going to be the European and American powers, which includes Russia, against maybe the Chinese powers and North Korea, right? We could have realigned it, but we didn't. We antagonized the Russians. And so now bring it back to February 2022, and there's a meeting in Germany. And the Russian troops are right on the border of Ukraine. And who's there? Well, Biden was asleep, I think, or maybe just playing bingo. Kamala was sent there. And she reaffirmed that her goal, or the United States' goal, is to have Ukraine join NATO, which is right on the border of Russia. And what does Putin do? He's like, that's a big middle finger to the Russians. They invade.
Right. Let's bring Tyler on now. Tyler, there we go. Hey, Tyler, how you doing?
Hey, Tyler.
Good. How's it going, everybody?
We're right in the middle of the discussion of actually, we've kind of digressed to World War II, but we're talking Ukraine.
I brought it back to Ukraine.
Well, wait a minute. You did. I don't think I digressed. I think some of these points are relevant. It's history.
Right. But real quick. Tyler is my co-host.
So Annette is disagreeing that you're digressing?
No, I was the one who did the digressing. I was defending myself a little bit, Tyler, I have to admit.
Yeah, but Tyler's my co-host for Fired Up California, and that's a new show. We've got two under our belt. We're going to shoot our third one. We're going to talk about California's new mascot, or what do they call it? Official?
New what are you referring to exactly?
The cryptoid. We're going to talk about a cryptoid.
Oh, the cryptoid. Yeah, Bigfoot.
Yeah,
Bigfoot sightings. Yeah, something like that.
Official cryptoid of California.
Yes, the official cryptoid of California.
But we're also going to talk about the boondoggle and the Trump administration and Doge and how it affects the high-speed rail. Today they were protesting the Secretary of Transportation. So we'll talk about that and a few other topics. So let's get back here to it. So we put away a little bit of history. We talked about Tyler, about the coup, the 2014 coup. So we're going to talk about right now why we're talking about this. Well, look, Trump did a Fox News radio interview, and he went off on Zelensky, you know, and he's dismissed Zelensky's importance in some of the peace talks, citing, hey, the dude had 3 years, got nothing done. So we all know this. We all saw the key points on this. So for the audience, what I want to ask is, what does Trump's language reveal? I mean, he was pretty harsh. What does it reveal about his perspective on diplomacy towards Ukraine? And let's get right into it with Tyler. What are your thoughts, Tyler?
Well, he's playing hardball, that's for sure. I honestly don't like some of the language. Like, this is different than the article you talked about, but he made a tweet where, in my opinion, he's essentially blaming the war on Ukraine. And, well, I think negotiations and the overall, you know, direction is good. I'm not a fan of some of this language he's using.
I can't argue that. I mean, I support Trump, but I cringe. But I also keep the faith that, look, I have Hody Johns coming on. He's a libertarian, my partner's co-host, and I disagree with him because, you know, he said ghostwriters who wrote The Art of the Deal. I'm like, yeah, he did, but he kind of wrote what Trump was telling them. And I keep the faith because Trump always does this. Anybody who's seen Trump knows he has a pattern of being bombastic with the demands. And that's how negotiations start. That's not how every negotiation starts, but that's how his start. But it was a little bit cringe.
I was going to say, that's how Trump negotiation starts.
But look,
me the farm, and then, okay, maybe I'll just take some sheep.
Exactly. Right. We're going to get into it, but we're going to show how it worked with the rare earth minerals. There's an update on that I have for you guys. So, what's his language show and Trump's language towards him? And should Zelensky be in the conversation?
Well, I have to agree with you and Tyler. It is over the top. At the same time, Zelensky, and I don't fault Zelensky for this, but he has a unconditional get your butts out of my country type of stance. But like Trump said, you have no cards. You what are you going to do? Are you going to overrun the Russians? I mean, I think they went over the border about 5 miles in one little salient and came back. I mean, what's Zelensky supposed to do? So he's got to realize this is not Putin needs to completely surrender. This is now we got to negotiate how much of Ukraine Putin's going to take. And I think Putin wants to end the war. He's lost, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, maybe over 1 million soldiers already. So Putin's ready to pull out, and Zelensky's like, no, we're not ending the war until you get out. And that's not going to happen.
Right. I believe that Zelensky's doing what China did in Korea. We got the numbers. We're just going to keep throwing the match up until we come to an agreement. And I think that's what he's doing. I think he wants to get Big John Cal was Dombrowski, that one region. He's going to keep
Donbass.
Those are ethnically Russians. So
there's three. There's the Donetsk, Luhansk, and Donbass. These are the three oblasts.
Damn, which, look at that. With the nice accent there, too. Way to go, Tyler.
I remembered one word, but he had all three.
Annette, your thoughts. Should Ukraine be a part of this conversation?
I hate the way Trump is behaving, actually. And I'm going to disagree with you. It's not that I don't like Trump. I don't like the language. I don't think it feels like it's, you know, I get that he wants to be. He's going to keep on saying, I'm the one. They wouldn't even be talking if it weren't for me. Yada, yada, yada. I just think that is not the way a leader should behave. This is a part of Trump that I dislike entirely. Because the point is, it's not helpful, William. It's not helpful. And I know, you know, he doesn't like Zelensky. He makes that pretty clear, although he said in the thing that I listened to today that, you know, he's fine with them, but he's not been effective and he's not gotten them any further. And I understand all of that. But, you know, Trump likes to continue to just puff himself up at every opportunity. And I just think that that's a waste of time. I don't like the language that he uses. I don't like how he talks sometimes. And I think when it comes to diplomacy, that is just not something that feels like it's bringing people together, especially for the people that are not Trump fans.
Right, right. So Big John chimed in and said about 850,000. I heard the Secretary of State say 700,000 yesterday, but it's close to 1 million. Okay, so let me explain Trump to you guys. Let me explain Zelensky to you guys.
Okay.
He actually got into heated debates with Biden as well, but that was not really broadcast over the news. We all know the media, how it works. But here's the problem. Zelensky likes to do a lot of talking in the media. Trump's talked about this war from day one, how it should never have happened, how it could have been avoided, how much money we're sending. And he's tired of Zelensky playing to the media. So, for example, Zelensky's the one who came to New York City last year and started talking about a partnership with the rare earth minerals with the U.S. Then he's getting pissed because he sees things aren't going his way. Trump's saying this or that, and he starts to spout his mouth. And Trump is angry because we all know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry knows, without the U.S. aid, Ukraine war would have lasted probably 6 months. You know, that's just a fact of life. 60 million in military aid, about 20 million in economic aid. A rebuild of their economy and their countries. Billions. Yes, billions. 60 billion. A rebuild can cost is going to be, we're looking at an excess of 200 billion. Trump's like, enough, you little man. That's how Trump. So Trump pushed back on Zelensky. Do I agree with all three of you guys? The language? Yeah, we all agree it. But we are no longer in a statesman type era of pre-World War II, post-World War II. It has changed. I think social media's helped create that change. You know, Big John.
I think helped create that change. You can say it's social media. I think it's Trump has brought us there, to be quite honest.
Well, social media was here before Trump.
I think it was not.
No, I mean the unstatesmanlike era. You're saying we're over with statesmanship like we had in this post-war liberal order. That was Trump's doing. It was Trump, an 800-pound gorilla, who was saying whatever the heck he thinks. And Zelensky, small little man,
that was
this and that.
Only George Donald. Now, Tyler, you bring up a good point. Actually, you bring up, but that said, Trump's been out of power for 4 years. I mean, he was in power for 4 years. He had a hand in it, but at the end of the day, Democrats have always been like that. It's just, so what's happened is our side has taken it to another level, and that's what tends to happen. That's my opinion. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened, but that's how I see it. Okay, let's keep moving here, though. So Zelensky was not invited to the Saudi Arabia for peace talks. My take is, well, you talk to Russia, you talk to Ukraine, then you bring them together. And why can this be done differently than normally? Well, because we're funding the war. The guy who has the money's calling the shots. So fair or not, I may not like how it's done because I wasn't brought up that way. But I'm like, we're funding the war. You're going to do as I say, period, end of story. And I think there's friction there between Zelensky and Trump now. I don't think Trump likes Zelensky at all. Gee, your thoughts on him not being part of the negotiations there?
No, I think Zelensky has a one-trick pony type of approach to this. Get out of my country. Otherwise, this war will continue. But like you said, we're paying for it. It's our drones flying up there. They got their drones too, and they're buying weapons with our money. But, you know, that's North Carolina homes and Pacific Palisades homes flying into Russian tanks over there. That's our money. So I think Trump's right to say, okay, look, we're not funding this anymore, and if all you're going to say is get out of my country and we're going to continue the war until you're completely out, that's not helpful. That the war won't end. The way the war will end is either Putin says, okay, I'll pull out, but I get this land, or Trump says, okay, fine, well, we're going to pull the money, and then Putin will sweep west across Ukraine. I mean, that's what I see happening if they don't come to a deal. So that, yeah.
Gotcha. Tyler, so Zelensky's using the media, and I think he's using it wrongly. He needs to shut up and go to the Trump side. Hey, let's take this to the background. We don't need the public. I think him whining in public is actually – it makes him look like the jokes they make about him being a little guy, which I'm probably the same idea. But on the big stage, he's looking metaphorically like the little guy whining. I'm like, shut up. Take this – behind closed doors is my thought process, because I think he has a point in the sense, you know, you need to include me, at least give the perception that Ukraine is part of these initial talks, even if we're not. Your thoughts?
That's exactly what the Biden administration would have done. Whether or not Ukraine was actually part of the talks, they would have at least given the facade that Ukraine was part of these talks, right? But Trump doesn't do that. He cuts all the BS. He says, no, I'm not going to talk to little man Zelensky. I'm going right to Putin, and he's going to negotiate something. So but you also said, well, Zelensky's whining. He doesn't look good. I think this could actually turn out in Zelensky's favor, because you have all of Europe, which is now siding with Zelensky. And while America has funded a lot, especially in the weaponry, Europe could be taking a big step up here. Because Europe has now said, well, we can't rely on America to continue their goals because, I mean, Russia's right next door to Western Europe. That border is very close.
You're right. There's always risk. Here's the problem. The next closest nation that have helped in funding this war is Germany, $12 billion. Germany, I did some research on this. This is 4 or 5 years ago, so forgive me. But they had like 9 subs or something like that, and like 6 of them were in the yards, and like 3 of them had been in the yards, like perpetually never coming out. They had no army. They have nothing. Remember during the Libya crisis, Europe went to Canada and the U.S. We ran out of bombs. We're going to build these devices so they'll fit on our planes, but can you provide us the bombs? So theoretically, I see what you're saying. Realistically, I think they have nothing. They are literally at the ground zero to build up their own armies. You know, gee, your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think remind me the question again. I was listening to you so well.
Zelensky, should he just shut up and say, let's take this behind closed doors? I guess what I'm asking is he really whining and making himself look worse? Or do you agree maybe with some of what Tyler's saying, that he can come out smelling like a rose because Europe's going to back him?
No, I think if I were in his shoes, I would be not whining, but I would be fighting hard to be at the table. But I would also show some modicum of I'm going to do something here. I'm not going to just hang on this one stance that I have. So I don't fault him for that because, of course, it's his country. I mean, he was elected to defend the entire region, and I don't think he's come to terms with the idea that he's not going to have the entire region. So I think that's why he's being excluded. But should he fight to be at the table? Yes, I think he should.
Gotcha. That's a great segue. And we'll start with you, Annette. Zelensky, the dictator, the little man, Napoleon. Yeah, well, yeah, Napoleon was a dictator, self-made emperor there of the French Empire. Okay, so, Annette.
Yes.
Zelensky is not elected due to canceled elections. He canceled the election and created martial law. He also banned a religious denomination. He had a hand in the death of a political opponent after they arrested him. He died in custody. He banned a language group. He restricted Russian music and books. Shades of a high Hitler. He rules by force with the martial law. Since 2022, he centralized power. He created a mass media. He suppresses democracy, so he suspended 11 parties in March of 2022 and sanctioned critical media like Strana.ua. So, after saying all that, is this a product because they were invaded, or is he acting like a dictator? Your thoughts.
Well, I want to say something that I didn't get to say when I was about to interrupt you, Tyler. Sorry about that, because I was excited to say, does anybody remember when he and his wife did that vogue spread, you know, during a war when
that was
it was a while ago. It was actually a couple years ago. They were on the cover of Vogue and there was like rubble and they were dressed. It was something to see, and it was actually really disturbing. And I thought of him differently, but I want to ask you, I guess, because you asked a really good question about him being a dictator. Didn't we, meaning the United States, sort of create the person that he is right now? Aren't we part of the problem in terms of who he's become in the region and who he's
become? Oh, my God. That's a great point. And you're right. I forgot to push back on Tyler. Because Tyler said, well, if Biden had it, well, Biden wasn't doing it. Biden did not want peace. Biden would never have had peace talks. And you're right. He's acting like a petulant child because he was getting money hand over fist until Trump took office. Once Trump took office, it's like I guess it's like a stepfather coming in. Gotta clamp down.
You remember at the end of 24 when the Democrats were just shoving as much Ukraine aid down the pipeline as they could? Because they knew it was going to stop the moment Trump got in the Oval Office.
Yes, we did help create this.
It was almost criminal the way they did it. They just were like, it was like a bank robber trying to get the money out of the bank before the cops show up.
Yes.
It's horrible.
And I don't have the surveys or studies in front of me, but Ukraine is known as one of the most corrupt countries that a lot of laundering goes through, money laundering. And the reason I say that is I believe that Putin's worth billions more. We're talking about Ukraine. But I think Zelensky has lined his pockets. And it wasn't just the Vogue. Remember, they caught him going in Romania, one of those countries, their version of Fifth Avenue. You know, maybe it was New York City. And they're shopping $29,000 handbags or something ridiculous like that. So you're right, we did create this. Before we go on, I want to answer my producer. He hates Putin, obviously. We all at the end of the day, Ukraine is the one who's under our control. Ukraine is the one who we can dictate to. Trump also is not dumb. His administration understands 2014, Virginia and Ireland. He understands they understand the encroachment upon Russia's borders. And to the audience out there who may disagree, well, what would we do if China said we're going to put missiles in Mexico? They just got a deal. And then we can even go back in history. We were on the verge of World War III threatening Russia, get those missiles out of Cuba. So I understand Russia's concern. So while I may not care for Putin, as I told Tyler on the phone earlier today, when in terms of who started this, we started this in 2014 when we supported a coup over their democratically elected government simply because that government aligned more with Russia than they did with the U.S. So with that saying, though, gee, your thoughts, is his dictatorial powers and he's giving himself a product of the war or combination of both, or is he a dictator?
Look, our first quote-unquote dictator in America was presumably Abraham Lincoln, right? He suspended habeas corpus.
Uh-oh, he's going to dangerous territory here.
I know. As a Republican, the father of the Republican Party, but he did it because he had to do it. And it wasn't because he enjoyed the dictatorial powers. It was wartime, and there was national security was more important. I think that's what's happening here. Now, with the exception of the neglect of Gonzalo Lira, I believe that's what his name was. There's some fuzziness about that, but the rest of it is all within line of what a wartime leader would have to do in order to maintain national security. Woodrow Wilson even said, you know, loose lips sink ships. I mean, there was a sense of you don't have that free of speech right now. It's wartime. So, yeah, is he enforcing some dictatorial powers? Yes, but does he need to? Probably. I think so.
I agree on that. Tyler, your point. I mean, your thoughts.
So what was the question exactly again? What am I mean, I was listening so much to G.
Is he acting like a dictator at the moment?
They kind of canceled elections. That seems like a bit of a red flag. You usually have elections in a democracy. So from that perspective, yes. And also the Ukrainian media is one of the most controlled media spaces of any country. It's one of the most centralized state-controlled media apparatuses that exists. From those two points alone, you could say that it's not quite the democracy that the Democrats have been spinning this narrative for 4 years.
Let's save democracy. Arrest that Russian minister of that church over there. A couple of points to add to G. FDR created concentration camps February 19th, 1941. So
that one I disagree with. That was uncalled for, but
using America as a model of good behavior during wartime. I mean, better than a lot of countries, but
that defends. That was wrong. I thought too. I see the bigger picture, but that's a sacrifice you have to make. You have to police. You have to make sure your police, your intelligence agencies are there. It's a balance of a quasi-dystopian state in terms of also keeping the peace from spies, because you are correct. Loose lips sink ships. That's a United States Navy mantra. If we had gone to war with the Russians in the mid-1970s, we would have been literally destroyed. There was an Egypto guy named John Walker who was giving thousands and thousands of documents as years went on to Russia that included all our daily secret call signs. They knew where we were at. They knew how we operated. They knew what operations we were doing. So it is a balance there. All right. So we're
close. One point I do want to point out. So Ukraine is occupied, right? So I think our wartime, if we had been occupied, I think Lincoln might have done a little more different things. I think briefly we were during Gettysburg and all that. But just that's a salient point right there is Ukraine is occupied. So free speech, sink ships, and the enemy's right next door. So that's a little different.
Right. Some of the issues do go down to humanitarian. He's rounding up people who disagree with him. He's allowing the mob to take those people out, hurt them physically, if not kill them outright. He had vans driving around looking for men who weren't in the military, rounding them up. So there's a lot of pros and cons. It's a tough – so I want to say he is a dictator. And he's verging on the Napoleon-esque, the fascism type, because he's had unfettered power for the last couple of years. But I think the war put him in this position. And what's that saying? Power corrupts and it corrupts. Absolutely. And I think we're seeing that happen with him, especially with Tyler. You brought up probably the best point. And I always try to get America to understand he who controls the media controls the world. And I saw that firsthand in Panama. So the importance of the message, if it's only one message being stated, eventually that's all people believe because that's all they hear. And ironically, we're all in California. That's the reason our state is so deep blue. Our candidates, because of the state party, they don't campaign in blue districts. Thus, they never hear the conservative message. All right. We spent a lot of time on this, but I do want to get to this before we close it out. Zelensky was demanding G.I. Joe in Ukraine for peacekeeping. And he's got a point. As I said, Europe can talk a good game, but they have nothing. They have nothing in terms of a standing army. Hell, we're in Germany, and we're in the U.K. supporting those two countries, even though they have a military. They don't have the manpower nor the weaponry. They have nothing to sustain a peacekeeping. I do not agree with U.S. troops. I do not agree with G.I. Joe in Ukraine. Not only that, under NATO control. Your thoughts? We'll start with G on this one.
I'm torn on this one. We've seen how the NATO powers outside of the U.S. They're weak. They're wimps. They run at the first sight of anything, and they can't even keep peace in Africa, right? They send down EU troops down there, NATO troops, and nothing happens. So I'm torn because without us there, I think it's just a half measure. But again, I don't want to be an interventionist either, so. I mean, maybe we don't send troops, and we got to figure out a different way to at least give Ukraine some comfort that Russia won't be rolling tanks over their borders anytime soon.
I don't think they're going to be with the peace deal. I don't think they're going to be rolling tanks over for the next 4 years with Trump as president. And that gives those damn Europeans 4 years to build up their military and get their own troops there. Annette, your thought.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I saw a segment on this today. I agree with what you said, William. I mean, I do not want our troops to be there. How about Britain? They seem to be pretty excited about supporting Ukraine. Have them put their people there. I mean, I feel like they're one of the people that have propelled this, the way they've supported this war, I think, in a way, and politically, and they've talked about it, and they've promoted it, I think. So I would love for it to not be us.
Yeah, Keir Starmer, who is a fascist, is their current prime minister, and he's committed 10,000 British troops. And Zelensky says, 10,000? I need 200,000, you know? Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's have Olaf Scholz and his family. Let's put them right on the front lines. You know, let's have all the prime ministers of these European and chancellors of these European countries put their families' lives at stake defending boots on the ground in Ukraine.
Exactly.
I'm going to push back on G here a little bit. So, let's say we did go to Ukraine. What's the end game? It's just like Iraq, Afghanistan. What's the end game here? Even Cheney was like, he was asked this by Colin Powell. Colin said, what's the end game in Iraq? We stay. If boots go on the ground there, G, do you think they're ever leaving? And if they did leave, it'd be just like Afghanistan.
That's exactly why I'm torn, because I know we'd have to be there a very long time.
You've got two young boys, correct? Let's say they decide to join the military. Would you be okay? I always throw this because, as Annette said earlier, it's the elites, or she said the powerful. I mean, it's the elites. They're okay with sending the working class plebes to go to war and die as their rich kids get medically you can't go. You got arches on your feet, Trump.
Yeah, they could have bone spurs or something.
Yeah, bone spurs. I mean, what if it's your kids? Would you be okay with that? And I do mean to put you on the spot on that.
No, I don't know if my answer came across. I mean, that's why I'm torn, because I don't want that. And I don't want to be there for 20, 30 years as some peacekeeping force. We have better ways to spend our money. A better deal would be, hey, look, Russia, you stay on your side, and Ukraine, you stay on your side. We're going to pour open the gates of trade, that prosperity will never be greater than if you just stay on your side of the border, and we'll give you all the privileges of our economic prosperity, right? And then get them hooked on that. Get them hooked on prosperity. So,
you know, that's what they said about China. We're going to introduce democracy to China. Instead, they stole all our technology and became a behemoth we have to deal with now. All right. I'm going to hold off on the question on the rare earth minerals. We're going to pop that into our hot takes section. So, cause we're at 40 minutes, so I want to keep the show moving. And, because I want to put in hot takes, cause it's not a deep answer, but it's a great question. So let's wrap up this wild ride. Trump has smacked down Zelensky, but Zelensky has pushed back, and Even VP Vance is riding shotgun for Trump's America First peace plan. Trump has had sharp words. Vance has had his rant on X, which a VP has never done in the history of our country like that. And so we have the peace plan starting to happen in Saudi Arabia. Ukraine's being cut out. And that's a game changer because all this is out in the public. And I do remember as a kid, the Vietnam talks, even all that for Paris was kind of secret there. So they're shouting past each other, both sides right now. But what's next? How is this showdown going to shake out for the Russia-Ukraine mess? Do we keep our swagger? And for the long run, do we create peace or are we just going to be stuck for more drama? I predict we will have peace and I predict we will have peace sooner than later at this point. So moving on. Bass boots her rainbow buddy. LA fire chief Crowley. Is she a damn scapegoat or did she just forget how to fight fires and was justifiably fired? So real quick, before I get into the discussion, I don't know if you guys heard, she was fired today. Your quick thoughts, Annette, on the Democrats' rainbow buddy getting fired?
She was terrible at her job. Yeah.
Whoa, right? There is no woman power let's unite here. Whoa.
No, not at all. I mean, I listened to her, though, in the press conferences. I mean,
Well, in her defense, you can't confuse her with the other rainbow buddy who said, well, if a man needs to get rescued during a fire, then he should have gotten stuck there.
You know, that was worse. But honestly, William, what also happened was, and G was there, we went to a meeting and they talked about the fires and how woefully unprepared they were and some of the things that were happening in terms of when it actually had gotten out of control, what they could have done and what could have been more helpful. And it made you feel like they were unprepared because there wasn't someone thinking ahead.
Right, right. Okay, so let's get into it. Annette got the first jab in at her fellow.
Where's your solidarity?
If there's one thing I'm not, it's probably a feminist.
Yeah, I know. I'm just...
You guys know.
So for the audience out there, Mayor Karen Bass gave LAFD Chief Kristen Crowley
She should be gone too, by the way. The mayor, I mean...
Yeah, but that's election. You know? So Crowley had a blazing exit, I guess you could say. Why is this so hot? Well, it follows the Palisades fire that happened January 7th. 23,000 acres in the Palisades fires. I believe over 40,000 in the greater Los Angeles area. It wiped out thousands. I don't want to say tens of thousands, but it was like at least 13,000 in the city of LA in terms of structures. Left a trail of tragedy in the wake of one of LA's worst ever blazes. And there's a new guy. So Bass Trap, Ronnie Villanueva as interim chief to douse the chaos. God, I love my little choices of words there. So we've got Bass versus Crowley, budgets versus blunders.
You're just on fire today. You were.
So gee, was this politics fair? Is Bass dodging smoke and mirrors, or does she have a legitimate reason to can it?
Well, I mean, this discussion's about to ignite, right?
I'm just going to leave you guys. I can't do this anymore.
In all seriousness, look, Bass was under a lot of heat, and even the governor was saying, all right, this is not my problem. It's a local problem. Never mind he didn't build the six reservoirs that he had to. I'm sorry, the five reservoirs that he had to and tore down six others during his term. So he's passing the buck on to Mayor Bass. And all the magnifying glass, the sun is burning down on her. Sorry, I had to make another fire reference. But I think she needed to pass the buck. I mean, she had to point the finger and say, well, you know, that's her job, to Kristen's job to fight the fires. She didn't do it. And, you know, we'll talk about whether they were underfunded and Mayor Bass wasn't really giving them the tools. But I think Kristen did have a little bit of an issue there because, like Annette said, we met with Dave McQueed of our fire department up here in Rancho Santa Fe, and he was giving examples of how they fought all – I think there were like four or five fires during that time here in San Diego, and they were on it. And he talked about the center fire over in Bernardo, Rancho Bernardo, and they were on it within minutes, and they had communication with different departments and different groups. And they got it put out within like 20, 30 minutes. I mean, it was out quick. And they set up checkpoints all around. And he said, we didn't have internal squabbles or external squabbles with different agencies. We just got the job done. And he didn't throw LA under the bus, but he was referencing that their communication is not that great up there. And I think Kristen's to blame for part of that.
Well, you know, G, that's because we're just racist and bigots and we're not rainbow friendly, you know. Tyler, so this Villanueva, his career spans decades in fire suppression, emergency management, and he's led thousands of LAFD personnel with 24 years in active field assignments before hitting the senior rank. So, yes, he is legit, the real deal, rising from firefighter chief deputy, swinging hoses, and not just riding ambulances. My question to you, so does appointing a grizzled veteran like him show Bass's genuine, aiming for stability, aiming for experience, or is she just trying to make right to deflect off of her? Does it matter if he's the right guy?
I think it's both. He sounds like a much more competent person for the job, and she's trying to deflect. She's trying to say, well, look, I am fixing things. I'm hiring someone who's actually competent and not just a certain kind of hire. So it's both.
Yeah, okay. So, Annette, Crowley failed to prepare the LAFD for fire season, supposedly. So here's the real kicker. And there's some depth to this. She sent 1,000 firefighters home instead of keeping them on duty when the Palisades fire broke out. However, part of the reason she had to send them home is because they were going to be paid overtime sticking around. Because remember, Santa Ana's were kicking up, they had to be prepared. So she had a budget decision. We don't have the money to pay you overtime. Head on home. What if there's a fire boss? Ah, I got it figured out. Your thoughts. How much fault do you put in Crowley for that decision?
Well, you know what? It's a theme that we talk about a lot on this show, just like we talk a lot about power, how it corrupts. We also talk a lot about money and how people make bad decisions. It was a bad decision. I mean, part of how the fire chief described things to us, I would say what G said too, that communication was bad, the preparedness was bad, the strategy was bad. And in any situation, anyone who actually cares about people, and I know people pretend to care about people a lot, but they actually don't, you would always take human life into consideration or the chance that there might be, knowing the Santa Anas were picking up, before you would even, in my opinion, worry about any sort of budgetary concerns. So I just think that her priorities were not where they should be, and that's a lack of leadership.
Right, but that's also a fireable offense if no fire had started. You know, that's a catch-22 she was dealing with. Had she kept them on, paid them off, no fire had it started, Bass would have had to say, you just killed. I'm trying to get 40 more million out, and you just gave away 1,000 overtime hours.
He's going to lose then? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying from her perspective, it was a lose-lose, and she should not have crossed two figures, maybe just one.
You can totally disagree with me, but I guess what I'm asking you is, could she have defended her position and said?
I think so because of the history. G, she blamed the Bass administration, Kristen Crowley did, for underfunding the LAFD by $18 million, including $7 million in overtime and lost mechanic roles. Also, equipment was not working right. Obviously, we saw nobody checking the pressure for the fire hydrants. Now, Bass turned around and says, well, no. I'll give you all a 7% increase. Little bit of context here. That increase was there on paper but wasn't due until this year, when the fire would have been over. Where do you stand? I guess my point is the media initially tried to run with actually she's trying to increase the budget. She wasn't doing that to defend her. I don't think that the people bought it. Your thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to reference the last question real quick. You send the firefighters home when it's a really rainy day. That's when you save the money. And on a windy day, you keep them all on alert. But to this point, I think...
Well, gee, just to let you know, Karen Bass agrees with you. That's what she said. So many words.
Yeah. Right. No. And so, you know, Annette and I being in charge of a school district, money is a concern. We only have so much. And you can't pay the bills if you're spending it wildly. So, but, yeah, in reference to the, budget, I mean, no, I think that is playing politics. You know, the government's role, I think, is to protect. And it's not to provide, right? And so in the last 100 years, we've gone into more of this, okay, we're going to provide for our citizens as well. And then that leaves less money to protect, and that's a problem, right? So we should be putting money towards firefighters. We should be putting it to police. We should have, you know, safe roads to drive on. That's protecting our citizens. But when we're providing, like, income transfers, and that's blowing apart our budgets at the national level and at a local level, you're not going to have money to save homes from fires. And look, Pacific Palisades people, they'll be fine. I mean, those guys are worth 10, 20 million. I'm talking about Altadena, where those are middle class folks, and they maybe had $50,000 in their bank account, and now they got to rebuild a $600,000 home. They probably didn't have fire insurance, and they got to live somewhere in the meanwhile. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should have saved our money to protect them, not to provide for, you know, our citizenry.
Right, right. And to the audience out, check out Fired Up California, episode 01. This in-depth, Tyler and I did. Okay.
I was going to say, I think I know there was some podcast episode where some people talked about this.
So let's wrap up this blaze of a story.
Oh, gosh, William.
So the Palisades fire laid bare some ugly truths about the LAFD and leadership in Los Angeles. Big vulnerabilities came out in the open. Was it Crowley's leadership dropping the ball? Was it Bass's funding fumbles? Or are they just both pointing the finger while the city burns? I think it's a combination of it all. But the public's trust has been lost. And like it or not, politically, I think Bass did make this move to save her political career. But more importantly, while I believe she did that, I also believe it sounds on paper, she got a great hire of someone with actual experience who I have no worries comes into that building, can throw me on his back and carry me out. Before we burn out and fade away, let's shift gears from LA's firestorm to a global inferno.
So that's a Def Leppard song.
I know. Don't get my kids. Stick around for Fired Up Hot Takes. Let's wait for our producer, Big John. Are you coming on tonight, brother? Let us know. He had Big John's hair was like perfectly combed when he looked up. When he looked up, he's like, whoa, my hair. I'm like, dude, that's because there's no strand out of place, man. It looked like he had the old 1950s Vaseline look there. Okay, Big Joe will be joining us tonight. So I want to actually scroll up. Give me a second here to find my notes here. I want to scroll up on I'm looking at my notes. But the first question for our hot takes, and for the audience out there, our hot takes is – I'm scrolling. Our hot takes, Fired Up Hot Takes, that's our lightning round. Questions are asked, and the panelists give their point as to whether they agree or disagree with a comment or two, and then they move on. I, as the host, reserve the right to go back to a panelist to clarify or respond to another panelist's take. So we'll make this the second question because I have to find it. But the first question, we'll go to you, Tyler. Is the Associated Press weaponizing language through its style book, as the White House claims?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's funny I was hoping you'd direct this question to me. This is one of my favorite topics. A favorite author of mine is George Orwell, and Orwell writes a lot about language. And one of the things that I thought about a lot with the left is the way they use and manipulate and weaponize language. They've been doing this for decades, since the 60s. And what we're seeing right now with the conservative movement uncovering all this is simply the public becoming aware of the extent to which the left systemically has done this for decades. And yeah, of course they are. Weaponization of language by the left and its many outlets, such as certain parts of the mainstream media, this is just a tool in their arsenal to try and shape debate and restrict the set of thoughts that you can have.
Exactly, I agree. G.
Yes, absolutely. And a great example to what Tyler was saying is, from the left, you're either pro-choice or you normally think pro-life, but they say, no, you're anti-choice.
Yeah.
Because that sounds more negative. And so that is weaponizing the language, and I think the Associated Press wants to continue that.
Miss Annette.
Yeah, well, yes. Are you saying, Tyler, A Brave New World, or are you thinking 1984, George Orwell, right? So
Orwell, yeah, Orwell.
Yeah, well, I'm reading A Brave New World right now, too. But anyway, but yes. Well,
Huxley's great as well, yeah.
Yes, and I think it's sort of a long, it seems like to me, I mean, I'm reading them backwards, but I already read 1984. But what I wanted to say to your point is to G's point, well, that's not so subtle, your point, G, but it's very subtle how they do it sometimes, too. And I catch it mostly, I always bring this up all the time, William, in my daughters, because how they will, my daughter, who I disagree with a lot of times, and who's in New York, how she'll say, oh, but they said this, and I'm like, wow, look how they warp language, look how they, like, distort it. And it actually works on people, like, over time.
Correct. So I agree with everybody, and my take is the term illegal alien. That is a legal term for an illegal alien, and that was a government term, and the AP on their own changed it to illegal immigrant, then undocumented too. They always softened it. I first noticed this over 20 years ago in my previous job as a writer. My company would sit there and get a new AP style book every year to our writers. And I just noticed little changes like that. So that is most definitely happening. Okay. Is designating Mexican cartels, MS-13, and Tren de Aragua as global terrorist organizations the right move? And what justifies it? G.
Well, okay, so are Border Patrol is going to come at them with PP shooters while they have machine guns? I mean, that's the problem. So... We need to use our military weapons against them.
Don't say PP shooters. I'm thinking.
So it does justify it. I mean, if we can use drones and attack them and save our American lives, yeah, I'm all for it.
Right, right. Yes, Big John, I understand pea shooters, but yeah, pea shooters. It's not PP.
Okay.
I was going to say just one.
Yeah, just unzip and they fire at him. You know, that's not the fear of God, unless you're John Holmes. I gotta go to you though. Can't go to that with that one.
Why can't you go to me ever? I think about
John because he said John Holmes.
I put out going for
okay, fair enough.
If you don't know who that is, don't ask.
I actually don't know who that is. Should I?
Okay,
know who
that is? That's good. That's good. Okay, so what are your thoughts, Ms. Annette?
Oh, I actually have a question about this. Why now? I don't know. Something about this feels sus to me.
Oh, I think why now? Because Trump is he only has 4 more years left. He saw how he was treated for 4 years and how they tried to impeach him. And I think all that has culminated into his, excuse my French people, well, I won't curse. I don't give a bleep. And this is what we're going to do because it's the right thing to do. That's what I personally think is how Trump's looking at his whole next 4 years. So I don't know if there's a conspiracy theory as much as Trump has always been anti-drug too. And from day one, when he took office his first term, he was anti-fentanyl. He brought that to America's doorstep in educating America about fentanyl, and it's only gotten worse under the Biden regime.
Well, didn't you watch Narcos, William?
No, I did not watch Narcos, to be quite honest.
Because it would say again that we're a big part of the problem too. I don't know. I don't like this. Go ahead, Tyler.
So I think it's a great thing. I think we should have done this a while ago. Yeah, I'm against invading Mexico. Like that's not a good thing. But okay, maybe sending in like a Delta Force to exterminate like El Chapo and his entire like top legal lieutenants. Yeah, it sounds good. I'll say it like this. If Obama can do drone strikes on American citizens, then I think Trump should be able to do drone strikes on Mexican cartels.
So my take is simple. I can't remember which novel it is, but it's a Tom Clancy novel, and they made a movie of it with Harrison Ford.
Yes.
And they're looking at satellite photos, and somebody goes, damn, that looks like a freaking F-16 went in there and dropped some bombs, and that's what had happened to the cartel's home and mansion. And I'm all for that. They know the life. They want it. So I'm all for that. Get drugs. And you know what? Life's not fair. But it's a fine line. And the sad truth of it is the more you do it, the more normalized it gets and the more it escalates. I only point you to Vietnam and Cambodia. I actually had friends who went into Cambodia on Spec Ops who tell me about it when I was a little kid. All my family friends were all Spec Ops. Well, they weren't called Spec Ops, they were just Green Berets.
Is it clear and present danger, William?
Yes, clear and present danger. Thank you.
So I should be like the resident movie. Right here.
Oh yeah, it's one of his best books. All right, we'll start with G on this one, because I know he's probably into this. Should Argentina's president Javier Milei face impeachment over the Libra crypto scandal as his opponents demand, and why? For the audiences, he sent out a tweet kind of pushing some crypto, and when he did that, everybody bought into it, but as they were buying into it, all the investors were selling and maximizing. Gee, your thoughts?
No, I don't think he knows what he was doing. I mean, he didn't personally enrich himself from it. He just put out something that, hey, our country will prosper from this. And then he did basically what Elon Musk did, I want to say about 3 years ago, when he said, well, I'm going to make sure that Tesla stock doesn't go below $420. And then Tesla stock, remember that? And I would say that would have been a lot more prosecutable than someone putting a tweet out there saying, hey, this Doge or whatever, the Libra coin would help prosper our country. Oops. I mean, so I don't think this is an impeachable offense, but it's politics, right? His opponents will argue otherwise, of course.
Tyler, another example of an individual who did this is Hawk. Y'all remember her.
That's what I was just thinking about. Yeah, she made a big boo-boo. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts? Should he be impeached or like, he screwed up and made a dumb mistake here. And that's what happened. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a big Javier Milei fanboy. Afuera. It's like my favorite thing. But, I mean, I really hope he didn't do this or make some private profit off of this. I mean, if he did, I think that, you know, in the United States, I think we should be a nation of laws, not men. And I would hope the same applies in Argentina. If someone broke the law and it's an impeachable offense, they should be impeached.
Right. And our producer,
but I hope that it's not, because I like Javier Milei. So.
And our producer chimes in, Musk is well known for manipulating Doge prices. Miss Annette, your thoughts. Should he be impeached?
Well, I don't want to answer that question, because I like him too, Tyler. And I guess you do too, G. I like him. No, I don't need to be impeached. I think he's got his political enemies looking for any little thing that he does.
I agree. He has the elites are out to literally kill him if they can, because of everything he's doing there. He has literally taken the chainsaw to that government, but it's worked for the better, and the elites do not like that. There is truly a caste class of less than 10% of the haves, and everybody else is dirt poor. Okay. Did Caitlin Collins post about Luigi Mangione's defense website as legitimate news item or to support his cause? And what motivated her actions? So let's keep it. We're dragging it a little bit. So did she put that tweet up on purpose to support him, or as she claims, was it news? Annette?
I'd say both.
Ooh, okay. Okay, you want to say why you think that?
Because I think she does support him, and I think a lot of people do. And I also think that it is newsworthy, because I think a lot of people are really interested in it, actually.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's a newsworthy story.
All right, Mr. Tyler.
Yeah, it's definitely newsworthy. I don't know exactly what her leanings are. Maybe she did it on purpose because she likes Luigi. She's trying to get in his DMs or something. I don't know.
Because he can't get his DM going.
He's getting a lot of mail, though. He's getting a lot of mail.
He is. And those would be some very unsatisfied DM women. Gee.
That's like being in a chocolate factory, but you can't eat chocolate because you're diabetic. I mean, that's a terrible situation to be in. I watched Caitlin Collins do a primary town hall with Trump, And I don't necessarily like her because she treated him like she was his ex-wife, just harping on him the whole time, and it was very annoying. So as much as I'd like to attack her on this one, I have to say I think she just saw it as legitimate news and it was newsworthy, and people ascribe that to her because they don't like her as much as I don't like her. So I think she's innocent on this one.
Right. So she was doing it just to support him. It was it was her personal site, you know. So CNN could have reported it. Two, this website's been up for a while. Three, she could have posted, he's got a defense website, but she also posted the URL. So she was doing it because she supports Luigi. It was newsworthy, but that was an excuse because she was posting it so people could go to his website. That's my take. And as everybody knows, it's my show, so I'm right. All right. Is there even an inkling of truth to what Margaret Brennan said about Nazi Germany weaponizing free speech to conduct the Holocaust? She said the Nazis used free speech to round up the Jews. This one's a little bit complicated. She was talking to Rubio. She tied it to J.D. Vance and his Munich speech about, you know, hey, you guys are locking people up for saying things you just disagree with. And she sat there and she tried to tie Vance to Nazism. Gee, your thoughts?
No, I mean, if she had meant that they basically weaponized the law against people who use their free speech, she would have been correct. That's what Germany did. But no, that's ridiculous. So there's no inkling of truth to what Brennan said.
Mr. Tyler.
No. And then furthermore, let's say even if she was right, if you're taking away freedom of speech to save democracy, well, you've destroyed democracy in the process. So what are you even saving?
Chase of Zelensky. Ms. Lynette.
Well, you could have started with me on this one because I was up Sunday morning watching it, and I thought Marco Rubio's response was great. No, and I think she sounded like an idiot. I do. I think she sounded really uneducated. It was a stupid comment.
Right, and I was like, she's wrong, but I couldn't quite word it. But this is the best way. After 1933, the Nazis abolished free speech entirely using censorship and propaganda. You know, so they actually had no free speech. They just rounded you up. You know? Well, I'm exaggerating. They started you first with your little sign on your suit jacket or whatever. Then they used those emblems to identify you and round you up. Okay, second to last question. Is the wall surrounding the Vatican built to keep others out? And should the wall be compared to the U.S. wanting a stronger border? This is in reference to Father Martin. Sounds like a TV show. Father Martin, Jesuit Father James Martin, a gay rights activist, asserted the Vatican is not a walled city. Tyler, we'll start with you.
That's just ridiculous. It is literally the definition of a walled city. So how about they take down the wall first and then we'll talk?
Gee.
We were just there about 3 years ago. That's a big, beautiful wall. I don't think Mexico paid for it. But I think they do, the benefit they get out of it is they can restrict who can come in and out, so it's not, the area is not trashed. So I think they utilize the wall to keep people out.
So they're trying to keep Rosie O'Donnell out. Ms. Annette.
Well, I mean, it's hypocritical in some ways, but yeah, it's obviously the very definition of a walled in, you know, I don't know if you call, I guess it's Vatican City, so yeah.
Exactly. And for the audience, the Vatican's 40-foot-high, 2-mile-long walls were built by Pope Leo IV in the 9th century to protect against the Islamic Saracen raids after the sacking of Old
Spain. That just sounds xenophobic, William.
Yeah, I know. In 846 AD. So they built the damn wall to keep people out. All right. So let's go back to Ukraine here to close out the show. Should we have a quid pro quo considering all the billions we've sent Ukraine? This is in reference to the rare earth minerals and us. Hey, man, we've been – without us, y'all don't have millions of dead in your war. Be thankful. You know, we want your rare earth minerals. Should we have a quid pro quo, Annette, with Ukraine for the rare earth minerals?
What? Okay. If there's anything you should start with me on, it should be like the Vatican. You know, I'm all things Pope. Go have me last here. This was the one you said have me last on, William.
All right. Well, okay. We'll go to G on that one.
I mean, I don't like the idea of quid pro quo. We just gave them a ton of money. I mean, it was a donation. And so what do we get out of it? Well, Biden doesn't want anything out of it, and Kamala doesn't know anything about trade except for, you know, growing up middle class. So Trump's going to get something in return, and we should. That's rightful. You just don't get – those were North Carolina homes and L.A. homes given over to Ukraine. I mean, that's the money that was sent over. So I think we should get something for that.
Tyler.
100%. We need to get something for this. I think this whole idea of the post-war liberal order that it's, we're just enforcing this for the sake of the rules-based order. This is old news. We need to put American interests first, and we gave Ukraine these resources to defend its sovereignty. Now we need to get something for ourselves.
Annette.
Okay, guys. I agree with both of you.
My take is simple. After World War II, Europe was decimated. We were rich, the most powerful country in the world, and we could afford to give money without expecting a return. We're $37 trillion in debt. The world has completely changed. This war only exists because of us and the Ukrainian being pushed by Europe. So, yes, we're in a different era. We should have gotten something out of Iraq, all that oil that they have over there. So, yes, we need to get something out of this. And for the audience, there is an update because Zelensky was saying, we're not going to do this. Yet, as I said earlier, Zelensky brought this to the U.S., the former partnership, and that's a smart move. If we're invested in Ukraine, we're more apt to protect and defend them, whether it's through negotiations or whatnot. So today, Zelensky did agree to sign a minerals deal. They haven't signed it yet, but it is in the process of being worked. And to the audience, this is extremely important because we signed away all the rare earth mineral deals to China, who's producing them for us. So we go to war. They just go, boop, and turn the spigot off.
They've already turned the spigot off. There's several key materials that they're not supplying the U.S.
And, in fact, Trump, during his first term, gave the green light to start producing the rare, to start digging up for them in the rare earth minerals here in the States. So, yes, this is something that is needed. And there you have it, my friends. Tyler, how about plugging the your show that we do together?
So we do a once a week Fired Up California, and we record that on Sundays. You can watch it Monday on YouTube or X, formerly known as Twitter. That's my working impression of you, William. We're going to keep doing that.
You got to get the
You got to work on it. G's going to be hosting Fired Up here in a couple of weeks, so look forward to that. And Miss Annette Ross is currently featured on The Big Questions with Big John, which is his interview show. So make sure you tune into that. So everyone, let's torch this woke geopolitical mess and wrap it up. Trump slamming Zelensky hard, calling out his failures while Zelensky's whining about being sidelined, and Vance is riding shotgun, doubling down on America First peace. So who will win out? We all know it will be Trump. Whether you like him or not, he's proven to be right so far. But before I go, don't forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and check out our work on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. Under the handle Grumblings Media. Make sure you like and share this podcast. Drop your take in the comments and stay fired up. And like Def Leppard says, it's better to burn out than fade away. We'll see you next week, my friends.